Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Ray Hager and I speak with State Senator Julia Ratty for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're delighted to welcome back to the program State Senator Julia Ratty. Before we get into that interview, though, I want to do a shout-out to Glenn Cook. He's been on this program many times in the past, and he was named yesterday the executive editor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. So congratulations to Glenn. Very well deserved. He's a good man. And now, Senator, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. So I wanted to ask you, as we go into this election cycle, apart from running against Donald Trump, what do the Democrats stand for in this election cycle?
It's a great question, and I think that it's a piece where, for whatever reason, we're just not getting our message out the way that we need to. But I think that the Democratic Party has stood for working families and making sure that people who don't always have the political power that others might still have a voice when we get to the point of making laws.
Okay, but you know what's ironic about what you just said is that's exactly the campaign that Donald Trump ran.
Well, I would argue that there's some other things that Donald Trump threw in there that the Democrats don't stand for.
But that is a little ironic, though.
Well, I think even, you know, not that I'm any national pundit, but this is just, you know, just Julia watching from Sparks, Nevada. But I think that even Donald Trump's campaign was surprised by how much working families came out and were how angry they were. And I think that that was news, not just to some of us who've been involved in the community for a long time, but was news to just about everybody during the last election cycle.
And that's how he ended up getting a lot of support in blue states, in working class families, people that traditionally would have voted for Democrats. And one of the knocks against the Republicans has been that they spent all their time over the 8 years of Barack Obama fighting Barack Obama. But when it came to the point where they got power, they didn't have a plan either. And so it's incumbent upon Democrats now to really come out and say, you know, what is it that we stand for and how are we going to apply this?
Well, excuse me, I agree with you 100%. And I think that Democrats have had a plan, that we've been working that plan pretty hard. And you saw a lot of really good things come out of the last legislative session here in Northern Nevada, in Nevada statewide. I think Nevada was a shining light to show what can happen when a body of elected officials and Democrats in particular have a plan and work that plan. But the other thing that I would say is I don't think that President Trump got elected because he had a great plan. President Trump got elected because he was willing to throw out fear, and he was willing to throw out bait, and was really willing to tap into that anger once he recognized it. It wasn't that he came out and specifically said, this is how I am going to make your life better. And so it's an interesting thing when you're a person who's choosing to run for office and trying to figure out, you know, what messages are going to actually land with your base, and then what is the actual work that you're going to do. And I will say that as an elected Democrat, I know that we do the hard work that really does lift up families.
Right. But I mean, that was his, you know, a major part of his campaign was that he was going to take care of the people that the politicians hadn't been taking care of. of, whether Democrat and in some cases Republican.
I don't argue that. I just argue that he did not have any plan to do so. And the proof has been in the pudding. He has done very little to lift up families since he's been in office.
I'll give you a buy on that because I want to go off in a somewhat different direction. It is interesting to see this. Chris Wicker was on the program, and he's your Democratic National Committeeman, and he was talking about the idea that Democrats are going to come up with a complicated message, that simple phrases are not the way to go. And he and I discussed this, and I said, you know, simple is what gets through. How do you feel about that? What are the simple messages that you can put out there for the voters to understand and then the details to follow?
So I think that what's interesting is the elections that we're talking about this cycle are not, while there is one national election that we'll be looking at in Nevada, the Senate race is going to be a big deal. But everything else that's happening in Nevada this cycle, all politics are local. And I think that if we're trying to just glom on to some great national message that's going to carry everybody over the finish line, that's a mistake. That the candidates that are going to do really well are going to be the candidates that really know what's happening in their communities. And so, as you know, I've been doing a lot of work on affordable housing. If you go out into the community and you talk to anyone about what's the biggest issue facing Northern Nevada, it's affordable housing.
And Southern Nevada.
Southern Nevada as well. Some different aspects, different influences that are making workforce housing in particular in the north a little bit more of a challenge, where in the south it's the more traditional affordable housing challenges that most communities face. So I actually think that it would be a mistake for any candidate to spend too much time thinking that five brilliant messaging points are going to carry them across the finish line. And what they really need to do is be in their community, know what's happening in their community, and address real issues that real people have. And if we continue to do that, I personally believe that the voters are smart and they will figure out who is truly working on the issues that matter to them.
Senator, you chair the legislature's interim affordable housing committee. And I mean, affordable housing, wow, that's the number one problem, I think it would be. The Census Bureau shows that nearly half of all renters in Nevada are cost burdened, meaning they have to pay more than 30% of their overall income for their housing and utilities. What do you see coming out of your committee for the 2019 session that will help in the issue of affordable housing?
So we are midway through the process. So the way that it works in the Nevada legislative process is that if you get an interim committee, that's a one-time study, you get four meetings. And so we have had two. We've been mostly in the gathering information stage at this point because I want to make sure that we're solving the right problem. Sometimes we come charging in with all of our good ideas but don't necessarily take time to understand the problem. And again, because of the dramatic growth that we've been experiencing in the north, the workforce housing issue is a bit new. It's not the same issue that we've been looking at over the course of time. I think the thing that people need to know is that Nevada has had an affordable housing problem for decades. This is not something that just happened yesterday. We are so far behind when it comes to the number of units that are needed for people who are income constrained. Depending on the statistics that you look at, it's either one out of four of the units that we need or one out of 10 of the units that we need. And so while building more units is going to be a part of the solution, and we're working on financing and working on how do we make sure that we build more fixed rate affordable units, we can't build our way out of this problem. And so we're going to have all hands on deck. It's going to have to take a public-private partnership. It's not something that government alone can solve. It's going to have the development community at the table, going to have individuals. I mean, just as a very simple thing, I don't know at this point, we're looking into this, how many units in the state of Nevada are now being used for something like Airbnb or VRBO? If you're a citizen of our community who is out there in Northern Nevada right now and you are still renting out your unit as a VRBO, you might consider putting that unit back onto the market for somebody to live. We're gonna have a short-term problem right now in terms of workforce housing, and every unit makes a difference. So there are, from the micro, what can I do as an individual if I have housing that I'm controlling, to the macro, how does government and public partnerships work together to solve some of those issues? But I think by the end of the committee, we'll come out with five strong legislative recommendations that will make a difference.
Could you,
Let me just jump in for a second. You know, you used a phrase, but what you were talking about was poor people that can't afford housing. We had very affordable housing during the recession. I mean, you know, we had tons of people out of work. We had tons of people that were leaving the area. The entire construction industry left town, and the housing prices tumbled dramatically. You're not going to see prices that low in our lifetimes again, I hope. And, you know, when you look at fixed rates, it's going to be tough to do that without a lot of government support, because the builders don't want to build, you know, housing that's going to stay at fixed rates because people can't make a profit. I mean, you see things going on right now, for example, in Midtown Reno, where the second round of developers are now in. The first round built it. They had low rents to get people in. Now it's thriving, and so they're coming in and raising rents. I mean, that's a natural process. If you don't have that, aren't you at some point pushing away business?
So I think that's why it's really important that I'll go back to what I said before, is it's important that we're solving the right problem. And so when we're talking about affordable housing, what we've done in the Affordable Housing Committee, and the way that I encourage our community members to really look at it if they're interested in helping to solve, is there are three separate housing issues. So the first issue is talking about housing for people who are never going to make more income. So we're talking about that senior citizen who is on a fixed income, they're getting their Social Security check, they're no longer capable of working, perhaps a person with a disability or some other extenuating circumstance, veteran. And we have funding sources that come primarily from the federal level that encourage mostly nonprofits, some for-profit developers, to develop housing that is at a fixed rate. You know, you can go out and get that apartment for $650 a month. It's going to be $650 a month. And there's some that are supported by federal housing dollars that are maxed at 30% of your income. So it's sliding scale, whatever. If you make $850 a month from Social Security, it's not going to be anything more than 30% of your income. So we need that pool of housing, and those are the housing units that we're working on, making sure that we're being the most efficient stewards of those resources to make sure that the most units get built. And by the way, there was some good information that came out of the last the budget appropriations bill that just passed for those kinds of funds. So that's the first thing. The second piece is housing for what I would call vulnerable populations. So now you're talking about an extenuating circumstance. So perhaps somebody has a substance abuse issue or a mental health issue, some of the horrific stories that we saw in the news about the community-based living arrangements. So now you're talking about the combination of housing and social services or supportive services. That requires a different strategy. And we are looking at some very promising practices that are basically housing as healthcare. So if you think in that space, if somebody has a significant health issue, let's just say diabetes, and they're on the verge of losing their housing. They lose their housing. Now they can't refrigerate their insulin. Now they end up in the emergency room. And if you look at both the quality of life of that individual and you look at the cost to the taxpayer, having them in the emergency room as opposed to keeping them housed is much more expensive. And so how do we be smart about using our dollars there?
Okay, let's take a break. We've got to make some money here to pay for this fixed rate show. And I hope you're right back after this.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
ProGroup Management specializes in providing industries with the necessary components to satisfy and exceed workers' comp requirements. Every business has unique needs and specific regulations. ProGroup Management stays ahead of the curve, providing up-to-date services to keep your industry in top form. Discover how we simplify your tasks, improve efficiency, and reduce expense to keep you moving in a positive direction. ProGroup Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Julia Ratty.
You know, there was a big ballyhoo in Washington, you know, at the end of last year when the Republicans pushed through this tax cuts and job acts, which, you know, lowered the corporate tax rate and gave a big, like a bonus to the wealthy. But what does that do to the federal low income housing tax credit program? Doesn't that really harm that program?
So anytime you're talking about tax credits, so I don't expect that every one of your listeners is really thinking much about tax credits, but a tax credit is...
Are you kidding?
Is exactly what it sounds like.
They've got their abacus right next to their radio.
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like, where a developer gets a tax credit for doing something that we are trying to encourage as a local government. In the low-income housing tax credit world, those actually get bundled and sold. And so when the tax rate goes lower, then the value of those tax credits are lower. And so there are estimates across the country that the tax reform bill will reduce the value of those low-income housing tax credits to bring down the number of units that are built somewhere between 30% and 50%. So just to give you some sense of scale, if it was a dollar's worth of tax credit, you used to be able to sell that for, say, $1.06. And now in the post tax reform world, you might be able to sell that for 92 cents or 94 cents for each dollar of tax credit. So it just reduces the purchasing power, the financing ability of a developer to build more units, brings down the number of units. In some cases, because that 30% sounds more than that delta, in some cases, it means that project no longer pencils. For those brave developers who go into the world of affordable housing, they have very complex financing packages that are put together. And sometimes that kind of an adjustment just means they can't get it to pencil.
So does that mean that developers will be less likely to build low-income housing?
I think the effect is that there will be fewer units. I
mean,
at the end of the day. So whether that is fewer developers actually building projects or whether it is that project was going to be 100 units and now it's going to be 80 because that's what they can finance, it'll end up, at the end of the day, it ends up being fewer units.
Okay, let's take another break and we'll be right back with Julia Ratty after this.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
I'm Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association. Truck drivers are some of the hardest working people you'll meet, delivering over 70% of America's freight and 92% of Nevada's. When there's a natural disaster, they're delivering critical supplies to help those communities recover and rebuild. Every sector of the economy and our nation's military rely on truck drivers. So let's take a moment to say thank you. On the open road or city streets, our truck drivers are rolling to make our economy and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with State Senator Julia Ratty.
Senator, you just set off during the break that the Appropriations Act, the omnibus tax bill, has some breaks. Could you go over that?
Yeah. So the good news is, so while we lost some purchasing power when tax reform passed, the good news is in the last budget, there was some wonderful advocacy by low-income housing groups, and we got a significant increase in what are known as the home funds. And those funds are distributed via the federal government to the state and into local governments. And they're the main mechanism that local governments are using to bring more affordable housing units online. And we also had extended some programs, some additional programs, low-income housing tax credit programs that we were afraid that we were going to lose. So that is good news that you will see those continuing streams of funding coming in. The challenge is as a state, we may be able to bring, say, 400 units online per year. And that's just, again, you know, we're so far behind in the state of Nevada, that will help. And obviously every person or family that's in one of those units, it makes a huge difference for their life. But we cannot build our way out of this problem. And so when it comes to affordable housing, we really have to be tackling it from both ends of the equation. We really need to be working on raising wages. So whether that's raising the minimum wage, whether that's workforce development programs, training programs, so that people can move up the job ladder into a higher wage, you are never going to solve the affordable housing issue solely by building affordable housing. You also have to raise people's wages.
So you see a minimum wage bill coming in the 19th session. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm certainly a supporter of raising the minimum wage.
To what?
to me, well, I think we need to get to a livable wage. So if
what's that?
Well, that's the problem right now in Nevada, right? It's changing dramatically. And you made a comment earlier, Sam, of during the recession, things were much, much, much more cost effective. And right now at the peak, they are much more expensive. I think for policymakers, we need to look at the data again in 2019 and see what does that number really look like for Nevada.
OK, but I mean, are we talking 15, 16, 17,
20?
I've 20?
Been on the record that 15 is probably appropriate, okay. But that we don't get there in one year. You know, it has to be phased in.
Let me ask you a question. There's a lot of rumors going around about Story County doing so well with all the development out of TRI and all these major companies coming in, that there may be something going on at the next legislative session to maybe take some of those funds that Story County is accruing and utilize them for some of the surrounding counties or cities that are being impacted by what's going on at TRI. Can you shed any light on that?
I'm not aware of any of those conversations happening.
We had it in the last session with Skip Daly.
Certainly.
But that kind of blew up.
Yep. So I'm not aware of any of those conversations happening. What I will say is there is a real issue that the impacts of the developments in Story County, the expense that comes along with those developments, so the places for people to live, the house, the firemen and the policemen and women and the schools to serve their children, the costs are borne by the adjacent counties. And so I think it's a real issue. It's a very difficult issue to solve. I think the other thing that's interesting about that issue is much of the revenue that is coming into Story County has been abated in the near term. And so I think it's a matter of digging into how much revenue are we talking about and is there a fair way to make that happen?
Okay, so that is something that is being at least thought about, if not talked about.
So again, nobody's talking to me about it. We did have a little bit of testimony in the Affordable Housing Committee meeting that, you know, people looking at that. I'm not aware of anybody working on it. I do think it's a real problem.
Do you have concerns that in the gubernatorial race between Steve Sisolak and Christian Kaliani, that could be damaging for whoever comes out of that primary?
I don't.
Are you supporting anybody at this point?
Yeah, I am all in for Chris G.
I mean, that's going to be from both sides, it's going to be an interesting sell. Steve Sisolak's already up on the air with a very large advertising buy.
So,
but nobody works harder than Chris G.
Nobody works harder than Chris G. And I've been at a number of community meetings in the north where Chris G has been present. And I am always just surprised and thrilled by the enthusiasm level. The regular voters, the regular volunteers are lining up, and the energy level for a candidate like Chris or for Chris herself. And I think that's it. I mean, Chris is so good directly with voters that every person that she gets to talk to, she's going to have a good chance to pick up that vote.
And that's where we have to leave it. Thank you always for being here. We appreciate it. And we'll be right back.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance, custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada, and we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
We have over a decade of archives of Nevada Newsmakers at NevadaNewsmakers.com. We'll see you on the next broadcast.